when I wake up, well, I know I'm gonna be the man who wakes up next to you.
You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show, Canada's most listened to spiritual talkback program.
Who goes along with you? If I get drunk, well, I know I'm gonna be the man who gets drunk next to you. And if I haver, yeah, I know I'm gonna be the man who's havering to you. But I would walk 500 miles and I would walk 500 more to be the man.
Well, folks, the moment you've all been waiting for, Donald Miller joins us here on The Drew Marshall Show. He's now the author of A Million Miles in a Thousand Years. Apparently, it's full of beautiful, heart-wrenching, and hilarious stories. I haven't read it yet. Is that bad? I'm still trying to get through Blue Like Jazz. He's on the phone with us at this very moment, the man himself. Please put your hands together for the leader of the Biblical Clarification Through Amendment Foundation, Joe Plantiga. Hi, Joe. Hi, Joe.
Are you? This is Don Miller. I think you got the wrong guy, Drew.
How the heck are you?
I'm terrific, man. How are you? It's good to talk again.
Well, it's been too long. It really has. And sorry about the YouTube has been going shutting down on people today. And so we wanted to play the clip of your prayer in its entirety, but it kind of faded out on us there. But man, I love that prayer. That was so
thanks.
So right on.
You know, it's funny. I had this prayer written out and was checking it with a bunch of people and seeing what they thought and getting feedback. And I just thought, you know, there's something not right about it. So I sat down at a Mexican restaurant about 2 hours before I had to give the prayer and wrote it on a napkin. That ended up being the one I used.
Wow. that's normally what happens in those sorts of scenarios.
Yeah, you just go, you know, I just got to speak from the heart here.
Yeah, yeah. Well done. Folks, if you're not sure what we're talking about, first of all, we're talking to Donald Miller, and whether he likes it or not, he's living under the shadow of the Blue Like Jazz guy. And next thing you know, we saw him at the Democratic National Convention delivering the closing prayer over, I think it was in Colorado, was it not?
Yeah, it was in Denver.
In Denver. How was the transition from Republican to Democrat, or have you always been a Democrat?
No. I attended the Republican National Convention about probably 16 years before when I was a kid, and, you know, grew up in Texas and was a diehard Republican. And just as I got older, I think I just realized that not all my values, but many of my values were not supported by the Republican Party. And so, you know, transitioned and then became a registered Democrat. Well, went registered independent and registered Democrat later. And then when Senator Obama came on the scene in the primaries, his Responsible Fatherhood Act is something that I supported when he was a senator. And when he decided to run for president, got behind him, and that's how I ended up at the DNC.
Well, well done. I was very, very proud of you for being there. It's nice to have.
Thanks. Yeah.
It's nice to have people finally represent. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, because I think there's a diversity of thought within different cultures, and so because Christianity reaches into different cultures, there's a diversity of thought within Christianity.
Yeah.
So I think it's not a very controversial thing for me, but I understand that it is for some. And that's okay.
Did you take a lot of heat? Because I've read some comments, I don't know, some blog somewhere or something, and man, there were some Jesus people trying to cut you a new one. It was just embarrassing how ravenous they were about, you know, the tedious things like, you know, your eyes weren't closed and you could tell you were reading it, so it wasn't a real prayer.
Well, Drew, you and I both know that there are weird people, and some of them are Christians and some of them are not. You know what I mean? It's not that they're weird because they're Christians. There's weird people everywhere.
Yeah.
And when those people meet Jesus, they stay weird.
But I have a problem with that, because when people buy into the Jesus program, Donald, should they not get more normaler?
Oh, no.
No?
No, I think that's a myth to think that all your conflict is resolved when you become a Christian. That's certainly not a biblical idea. Conflict is resolved in narrative terms in the wedding feast of the Lamb. It happens after you die. So right now we just have hope, and we have a messy reality that we deal with. But didn't expect, you know, us to not be influenced by the culture around us just because we're a Christian.
Yeah. Was it a new concept for the Democratic National Convention to close in prayer? I've never seen one before. I've never been to one.
It was. It was. And what's interesting is I've been to both conventions now, and probably there are many more evangelicals in the Republican Party than the Democratic Party, but the Democratic Convention felt like a church service. I mean, we were talking about issues. Well, honestly, it felt like an African-American church service.
Yeah.
A lot of justice issues being talked about, a lot of spirituality being talked about. So there are many, many, many Christians in the Democratic Party, and many, many Catholics, many, many people of faith. But but it is new for them to be so out with it.
Yeah, because when you look at that video, the crowd looks stunned that someone was standing up there praying.
Well, I don't know. I haven't seen the video very many times, but it certainly didn't feel that way in the room. It felt fine. But they are a very inclusive party, and so in the past, what's had to happen is people who were known for not being inclusive had to be quiet, or had to be quieted, and Christians, at least in America and evangelical circles, are known for not being inclusive. And so, but that's changing. And I think Democratic Party is embracing that change. And Barack Obama, specifically as a candidate, was such an over-the-top evangelical Christian, that he pushed that agenda to bring more of his personality into play. Now, I know that there are people who are listening to the show are going, there's no way he's an evangelical Christian, that's absolutely absurd, but they don't know what they're talking about. This man is an evangelical Christian. and say what you like, but he's your brother in Jesus, and if you don't want to be with him, then maybe you're not the one who's going to be in heaven. He's going to be there.
Folks, you heard it here first. You're going to hell on the Drew Marshall show.
No, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. How's your bike butt?
I'm going to go for a ride today. I'm in Kansas. I have my bike with me on the bus. And when I get off the phone, I'm going to go. And it's okay. We won't get into specifics on the radio, but it's okay.
Seriously, that's one of the reasons I do not bicycle. Other than the fact my knees are shot, my bum screams in agony. And I guess there's a callousness that comes with bicycling long periods of time. Because, folks, again, I'm not sure if you know this, but Donald Miller did like a Terry Fox thing, except he did it on a bike. You went right across the country, didn't you?
Yeah, we rode from Los Angeles to D.C. and on into Delaware last year, about a year ago now.
What was the inspiration for this, the scale that you stood on, or was there more to it?
That was part of it. I mean, I was certainly wanted to get into better shape, and biking across America seemed like a good way to do it. And but there was we were raising funds to drill wells in sub-Saharan Africa, and we ended up raising about $200,000 for an organization called Bloodwater Mission. And so that was the real motivation behind the ride.
So you know who else did this big bike thing was Mark Schultz.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did it the year before.
Right. He was showering by his trailer in some parking lot, Walmart parking lot, out in the back 50, and somebody came up because it was plastered all over his van or whatever, you know, donate money for this, that, or the other, and someone handed him money while he was showering.
That's about how it is.
Yeah. All right, look, man, this latest book, it took you forever to come out with the next book because, like, what happened? You came out with Blue Like Jazz, then you sat on your butt and hid from the publishers and just got lazy?
Well, not so much. It was more of a funk that I got into after having gotten what I wanted, where I just wasn't sure what was meaningful in life anymore. And it was really through studying narrative to create a film out of Blue Like Jazz, which we haven't shot yet, but we wrote this screenplay. And studying narrative and studying what makes a meaningful story and asking myself, well, if that makes a meaningful story, I wonder if it makes a meaningful life. So this book, I stopped writing for a year and tried to have just a more meaningful life. So part of that was riding my bike across America, starting the Mentory Project, all sorts of little stories that I wanted to live in order to enrich my life. And this book is about that experiment, asking the question, the tricks and tips the screenwriters use to make meaningful stories also work in life. And indeed, I think they do.
Okay, I got
so
it.
This book is a journey through that.
I got to admit something. You know, Blue Like Jazz was an obscure title and didn't really describe what was in the book until you read the book, and then you went, oh, okay, I get that snapshot. This is the same kind of I'm confused. The title, even the way you explained it, or the bio, or the promo material, man, this is an obscure project, don't you think?
Well, I'm I'm not sure. I mean, the title comes from a piece of prose in the book itself. But the concept is pretty straightforward. It's the fact that I got to create a movie out of my memoir, but we had to change so much to make it more meaningful. So I decided to make those changes in my actual life. And the book is really, it's different than Blue Like Jazz in the sense that this is a very hopeful book. It's an optimistic book. And
are you saying Blue Like Jazz was pessimistic?
Well, I think Blue Like Jazz was asking a lot of questions, and perhaps coming from a place of cynicism, and this book is not, definitely not.
So you're a happy shiny Jesus person now. Everything's going along good. Have you found love, by the way? You know how many people have asked me if you're still single? Like, I'm supposed to know?
I know. I have no idea why I'm still single, but yes, I am. And we'll see what happens there. But you know, this, you said shiny happy Jesus stuff. This book is not. It's not so much a religious book. I'm a Christian, and that comes into my writing because that's my faith. But this is not a self-help book that uses scripture to help you figure out the formula to be happy. It's a book that's exploring what brings meaning to life, and faith is certainly a part of that.
What I need you to do for me, Donald, in this interview is share with me something practical that I can bite into that will help me understand the paradigm of this book.
Okay. Well, life was going nowhere for me. I was trying to write a book. It was going nowhere. And I got a call from these screenwriters saying, we'd like to make a movie out of Blue Like Jazz, this book that you wrote. We sat down to do that, and I noticed as we began to write the screenplay that they were just making everything up. In other words, the stuff that we were putting in the movie was just not true. It wasn't even in the book. And I kind of questioned them and said, why are we doing this? And they said, well, your real life is too boring to be turned into a movie. We have to make it more exciting, more meaningful. We have to make Don, the fake Don, the character, do these things that charge his life with meaning. And so over the course of a year, I realized that those same things we were making fake Don do, I could actually do in my real life.
Give me an example of one. Give me an example of one right off the bat.
A character has to want something, and they have to want something good. If I can't point at you and know what you want in life, your story is going to be muddled. It's not going to be very interesting. A character has to be good. If the character is not a good person and he wins, nobody really cares. So you have to do things that are self-sacrificial. Character has to have a courageous attitude toward conflict and has to embrace conflict. And biblical worldview gives us a great example of that, because before the fall of man, there was conflict. Adam didn't have a helpmate suitable, so he was experiencing negative emotions before the fall of man. And so conflict is a part of life, and it's a necessary part of every story. And then there's, of course, the way that the story resolves. And so what this book does is it encourages the reader to go out and intentionally live a much better story by being a good character that wants something that's very clearly defined, overcoming conflict to get it. And then what will happen is characters do that, as people do that, is they will experience a much greater depth of meaning in their lives.
Okay, this is sounding a little similar to Anthony Robbins' Just Visualize It and It'll Then Become It.
Well, it's nothing like that.
Sure. Thank you for...
you got that. There's about three chapters in the book that talk about some of the things that I was trying to do that didn't work. And they were tragic, some of the darkest moments of my life. So there's no promise of happiness in this book.
Rob Bell's got an interesting little blurb here, and I want to read this. He's Mr. Velvet Elvis. You guys and your cool titles, Velvet Elvis, Blue Like Jazz, it's also sexy. if someone tells you that they've read this book and they enjoyed it or they liked it or they think it's a good book, then maybe they didn't read it. It's well written and funny and interesting and all that, typical Donald Miller stuff. But it's also, sorry, I added that, but it's also disturbing, really, really disturbing. Don is into provocative territory here, wrestling with the story and the role each of our stories play in it. This is very convicting, powerful, unsettling writing. I felt like this book read me more than I read it. Okay, so that's a nice little thing to get people to buy the book, pick it up, and read it. But, well, I mean, seriously, it's scary. It's disturbing. Explain to me the disturbing aspect of this book.
Well, Rob might have to do that. You know, Drew, I've been in the church for a long time, and one of my frustrations with the church is how difficult it is to be honest. And by that I mean to even know what is true about yourself, because we're so tempted to hide things and sell ourselves because we're representing the company of Jesus. And this book is a very, very honest book, and I think I've just come to a point where I no longer care whether the church affirms me or not. I'm convinced that when I go to heaven, Jesus isn't going to turn around and ask the church their opinion of me. And so this book is a soul-searching book, and I think once you sit down with somebody who's really honest, you realize that you're not, and you go back into the world of fake kissing everybody's butt to try to make people happy. But now you know there's this other thing out there, this honesty that you're walking away from. And I think this book is going to bring a lot of people to that point, hopefully.
Again, on the phone here, just about ready to say goodbye with the one and only Donald Miller. Donald, I'm sure lots of people say nice, positive, suck-up comments to you, and you're probably very desensitized to that sort of waffling. But I really like you.
Drew, you know what? I'm not desensitized. That actually means a lot to me.
Oh.
Every writer is really insecure. any sort of nice thing, we just hang our, we just go, I can make it to the next 15 minutes now.
Well, I mean, I think it's one of those things that a good communicator makes either the reader or the person in the audience feel that they're speaking to them. And I know people that have totally different lives than I do, and they feel like they're your best friend. I feel like I could be your best friend. Like, I want to hang with you. I don't have friends. I don't like people very much, but I think you and I could spend hours on the pipe. You know what I mean?
Well, I'm in Kansas. You gotta make your way down.
Dude, seriously? You live in Kansas?
No. We're here on this. We're
on the tour.
City book tour.
Yeah. No, I'm gonna come out and give you a big old man crush embrace when you come up to Kitchener Waterloo at the end of October. I think it's October 25th or 6th or something like that. And you're traveling with one of the best interviews I've had in a long time. Except I just forgot her name right now. Who's the comedian girl again?
Susan Isaac.
Susan Isaac.
Hilarious. She opens the show and she's killing it every night.
She
people
is.
People are blowing soup out their nose. She's so funny. Every night.
Hopefully it's not Chunky Campbell's. No, she was great. What was the name of her book again? Do you remember her?
Conversations with God.
Angry Conversations with God. That's right. Boy, I really enjoyed my time with her. And I mean, look, here's the suck up here. I just flew over to Vancouver this weekend. And I did a gig at the Comedy Fest out there. So, you know, here's.
Oh, yeah. I had a buddy who was there.
Oh, you did?
Nick Thune.
Oh, no, didn't come across
funny,
him.
Funny dude.
Well, you know, they had me as part of a panel, sort of a debate kind of deal, a town hall discussion. The theme for these debates were out of bounds my butt is what we have to say on this show. And the theme for the one I was the God guy. They brought me out as a God guy. And I thought, man, what am I going to say to these people? And I was just overwhelmed with, I need to say sorry.
Oh, yeah.
And so on the flight over, I reread your confession chapter in Blue Like Jazz, and I put together this 9-minute apology for all these people who had just, in the hour before I got up there, these atheist comedians just took the mickey out of religion, and justifiably so. And then I just got up there and just, like, barfed apology all over them. And, boy, was there a really, really warm reaction to that. Andy Kindler and I had, do you know Andy Kindler?
No, I don't think I've met him.
Andy's he's a recurring role on Everyone Loves Raymond, and he's on Letterman a lot. He's a short little stereotypical Jewish guy. Funny as, and we just talked about faith so openly. The atheist comedians came up to me afterwards and just really appreciated it. And so I want to thank you, because you inspired me to do that. So thank you.
Well, that means a lot to me, and I'm so glad for the people in the audience, because I think it goes a very, very long way.
Somebody
cares enough about you to apologize.
Folks, again, on the line here with Donald Miller, author of A Million Miles in a Thousand Years, What I Learned While Editing My Life. Can you just, before you go, tell me about the one, maybe just give us one aha moment when you were, you know, hours with not talking with anybody. I mean, when you were bicycling, were you mostly by yourself doing like a Forrest Gump thing, or what were you doing?
Well, there were about 10 of us, but we would get separated sometimes by a couple hours from front to back.
Right.
And so there was a lot of time alone. Yeah, a lot of time pedaling by yourself.
Okay, so this past Easter, for the last week of Lent, I gave up my eyesight for a week. I had a friend of mine source out some black contact lenses, and he's an optometrist, and he checked my eyes constantly, and I lost my vision for a week. And during those times, I had this, you know, these really intense contemplative kind of experiences. So can you relate to any of that on your bike ride? Was there any sort of contemplative, you know, deep, heavy kind of moments you had where God showed up in some kind of weird mystical way? Or was it just, oh, my butt
hurts?
Well,
I mean, just the reality, of doing 8 to 10 hours of cardio a day, you know, sun up to sun down. Sometimes we would go that long. And the biggest struggle was just the mundane boredom of being on a bike for that long.
Yeah.
But the realization that in a marriage, in a career, in a relationship with your kids, that the real beauty of the story happens when you keep going through the stuff that just seems trivial.
Hmm.
And that's where the real beauty comes. And in a good story, you just have to keep going.
Well said. Very well said. You are my new Mike Iaconelli. Folks, again, on the line, Donald Miller, author of A Million Miles in a Thousand Years, and you may know him from such books as Blue Like Jazz. DonMillerIs.com and AMillionMiles.com. He will be coming up to Kitchener-Waterloo area around October 25th, 26th. If you go to that website, you will find out the dates. And I look forward to meeting you face-to-face. I really am, Donald. Thanks, man.
Drew, I've loved every time I've been interviewed by you. This is always a wonderful conversation. Thanks so much.
All right, mate. You take care.
All right, bye-bye.
Donald Miller. I like the guy. I really do. I'm so anxious to get into this book. I'm honest about whether I've read a book or not. I interview about an author or two a week, and I can't read that fast. That's why I left school in grade 9. When we come back, we've got more goodies for you. Craig Gross, author of Jesus Loves You, This I Know. You may know him from Triple X Church and Jesus Loves Porn Stars, all sorts of stuff. He's another provocative cat, so hopefully you'll enjoy that interview as well. Later in the show, our early bird contestants, the finalists, the ones we said, hey, come on in the studio and we'll have some fun. They're going to join us later in the show. And then we've got the Council of Many coming up. And this week, a lady wants to know if she should invite her fiancé's alcoholic father to their wedding or not. And we got some fun stuff near the end, including Carrie Pomeroli and useless television trivia here on The Drew Marshall Show.
Like what you've heard? Listen again online at drewmarshall.ca.